It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Badgers football season is coming up here against the Buffalo Bulls Saturday. Head coach Luke Fickell described to reporters this week how it feels to be heading into his first season.
Are we to be one nation?
It's almost like, you know, Christmas morning. You're preparing for a lot of things. There's a lot of anxieties. You're excited about it, but yet there's a lot of things that you just don't know from each other.
Courtesy of WMTV, call in with a question. Share your thoughts on the upcoming season. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jim Polzin is a sports reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal, hosts the Open Gym podcast on Badger Extra. Jim, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Good morning. So Luke Fickell has a full season ahead of him. It's a new era now for Badgers football. Athletic director Chris McIntosh saying Luke is one of the top football coaches in the country. What do you think?
Yeah, it's been 9 months of kind of getting ready for this and hype. And it was kind of a surprising hire late last November. And then it's just kind of been a steady build of talking about Luke Fickell and getting excited about what he could bring to this program. And now we actually get to see him coach in a game. So I'm probably as, you know, excited for a season or as looking forward to a season as I've been. And I've been really in this business for about 25 years. So this season is, you know, it's upon us. And I'm as anxious as anybody to kind of see what happens on the field.
Fickell, in talking with reporters, discussed the ability to play clean in week one. What do you think that means to him?
Yeah, I think it means just limiting penalties, limiting turnovers. There's so much new to this team and this program. The offense is completely different than what Wisconsin fans have seen over the last 30 years. The defense is a little bit different than what we've seen. And there's new players, there's new coaches, obviously. It's just, you know, there's a lot that can go wrong in an opener like this, because you're trying to get it right, and you're so nervous, you want to show the world what you have. So I think what he means is basically let's go out and play clean. Let's limit penalties. Let's not beat ourselves. You know, try not to make mental mistakes. There's going to be physical mistakes. There always are in any sporting event. But I think the things that they can control, they really want to control. And that's just, you know, doing things right.
It seems like there's a lot for you to watch and take in so many new dynamics and new contributions to the team.
Yeah. It really is. And I think that's part of the reason why I'm so, you know, excited to kind of see this all play out. I've seen practices. They let us in 8 to 10 practices. And that's, you know, that's always very insightful and I love it, but you're seeing a team go against itself. You know, you're seeing teammates on offense go against teammates on defense. And I don't know how much you can truly learn until you see a team play another opponent. So for me, you know, the number one thing I'm going to watch on Saturday and beyond is this offense. It's going to be an offense that throws the ball around a little bit more than we're used to. And so I want to see how it all plays out, you know, against an actual opponent. And, you know, there's a quarterback, Tanner Mordecai, who's a sixth-year senior, who comes from SMU. A lot of hype around him. And, you know, I'm curious to see how he performs this season. Cause I know this coming here was a big decision for him and a very important part of his goal of getting to the NFL, and, you know, we kind of begin to see just how good he is starting Saturday.
Fickell labeled him as an ultimate competitor. What should people expect from Tanner Mordecai this season?
Yeah, he's been an interesting guy to get to know a little bit because he's from Texas, very, very low-key, very chill. Fickell loves him because I just think he's a guy that doesn't get up or get down too much. He's a pretty even-keel guy. I don't think not much impacts him, good or bad, on the field, and you always want that from your quarterback. So I think he's kind of a perfect fit for this system, for offensive coordinator Phil Longo, that system. I know they wanted to go out and get an experienced quarterback, and they found one. Certainly, you know, it's his sixth year. Like I said, he started his career at Oklahoma, transferred to SMU, and is now at Wisconsin. He's seen it all. You know, there's not much he hasn't seen in his college career. I think that's a good thing because I think you need a guy with experience back there.
Jim Polzin with us as we talk about Badgers football season, sports reporter with us. You can join in the conversation about what you see in the Badgers this season. 800-642-1234. Call in with a question. Share your comments. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jim, on the theme of newness, Mike Tressel, the new defensive coordinator, what does his coaching style mean for the Badgers' defense this year?
Yeah, he's a really interesting guy. He knows the Big Ten. He spent a lot of time at Michigan State, and then he joined Fickell at Cincinnati. So they've got a pretty good friendship relationship there. I think the best thing about Mike Tressel is that he understands he's walking into a defense that has been very, very successful for a long time. And he wants to implement some of his own ideas, and yet he understands what worked in the past. And he's not just going to tear up what worked in the past and be a bully and put his own stuff in. So he's going to try to blend the old and the new. Seems to be, in talking to players, a guy that everybody likes to work with, very energetic, very smart. I mean, he was valedictorian of his high school and college class of careers. So, he's a guy that's smart and yet I think is fun to be around. And, I'm curious to see kind of what tweaks he makes to this defense. It's still going to look, I think, similar to what we've seen in the past. And yet I think he's a very aggressive guy, and I think he'll add his own touches into it. And for as much talk as they've done about the offense, because that will be completely different. I'm almost as curious to see just kind of how Tressel puts his fingerprints on this defense.
Let's talk a little bit about Fickell as a recruiter. Told reporters that he and his assistants recruited more than a dozen transfer students since last December. And here's Fickell talking about his young players.
Where it's tough on you and you get worried about it, you also look at the bright side of things. Like, well, we've got some young guys that are getting a lot of work that, by the time they're, week 3, 4, 5, they're not young guys anymore, especially as much work as they got.
So by the time they're into week 3, 4, 5, they're not young guys anymore. Coach Fickell is going to see a lot of transformation in his recruits. What is he like in terms of his ability to recruit players and assemble a team?
Yeah, so far so good. The one thing I've noticed that's different from the past is that Fickell and his staff are just more out front in how they do things. They're on social media. I think they let their fans kind of see what they're doing. From a marketing standpoint, I think that they've, just kind of been a little bit in your face. And I don't mean that as a bad thing. I think it's good. This day and age, fans want to see, they want to hear, they want to know what their coach is doing. And I think Fickell's been really good about that. I think he understands, having been around this business long enough, that recruiting is about relationships and establishing, trust and relationships. When you're going out and getting recruits, you want the right fit. This place is a little bit different than probably where he's been in terms of academics. You can't just go out and get anybody you want. They've got to have the right transcript. They've got to have the right academic mentality. So I think that's been a little bit of an adjustment, of a learning curve for him. And yet I think he's embraced that. And he's done a good job. The class they're putting together for 2024 looks really good on paper. They finished off 2023 when they only had like a month to work on that class and did a really good job. And of course, as you mentioned, the transfers, this program needed some holes filled, certainly, and especially at quarterback and wide receiver. And between Fickell and Phil Longo, defensive coordinator, they really got a lot accomplished in a month and a half of kind of shoring up those positions and adding more depth in areas where they really needed it. So when you combine the new and some of those guys with what Wisconsin had coming back, I think that's why fans are excited. I think that's why, those of us in the media are anxious or curious to see how this plays out, because it's got the potential to be a pretty good team if everything goes right.
Jim Polzine, sports reporter at the Wisconsin State Journal, with a preview of the Badgers football season set to get underway as we talk about Big Ten conference football. Call in with a question. Bring a comment to the conversation. It's 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Wisconsin Badgers face off against the Buffalo Bulls Saturday in the season opener, also marking the start of head coach Luke Fickell's era at UW-Madison. So as the Badgers prepare to step back onto the field at Camp Randall Stadium, call in with a question, share your predictions. 800-642-1234 is the number to call in. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jim Polzin is a sports reporter at the Wisconsin State Journal and hosts a podcast on Badger Extra. Jim, turning to wide receiver Shimre Dike, senior this season, led the Badgers to 47 receptions and 6 touchdowns last season. Could Dike do it again?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, they're going to throw the ball a lot more. So I think he's probably as happy as anyone on the roster in terms of this, all the newness. And yet I've had a hard time kind of predicting what numbers are going to look like this year for that wide receiver group, in part because there's a lot more of them and they've really added some depth at that position. DK is a really good player. Obviously they've brought in transfers like Bryson Green from Oklahoma State and CJ Williams from USC and Will Pauling from Cincinnati. So I don't know how the catches are going to be distributed. I'm curious to see how that's going to play out. What kind of numbers is this passing attack going to look like? And yet I think it's important too, like not to get ahead of myself a little bit, but they're still going to run the ball. Wisconsin, for as much as I'm talking about passing, Wisconsin is still very much a team that likes to run the ball, and Phil Longo is not going to change that. He's got an All-American type in the backfield in Braylon Allen, and I think he's going to try to find him, as many carries as he can. So, I think this any good offense has to be balanced, and I think, I'm excited to see how balanced this one is.
You mentioned Bryson Green, who will lead the team in receiving yards this season. Why is Green a strong contender at wide receiver?
He walks on the field and you just kind of look at him and you can see that he looks the part. Very mm-hmm. physical guy, very muscular, made some catches in camp. We didn't get to see much of him in the spring after he transferred because he was out with a shoulder injury. So when fall camp opened and we got to see him, you're kind of like, oh yeah, this is why they recruited him. This is why he's been successful at Oklahoma State. I think he's a guy that can go up in 50-50 situations and come down with a catch. Seems to have a pretty good chemistry going with Tanner Mordecai. So yeah, I would not be surprised to see him as the leader or among the leaders in all the major receiving categories for this Wisconsin team.
You mentioned chemistry among players. I'm just wondering about how, when you have so many recruits and transfers, how do you create that synergy, that chemistry on the team, that instinct for the team to come together and really know what's going to happen next as a team?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And it has to be a concern for Luke Fickell and his staff, because you're bringing in a lot of new with a lot of guys that are used to a certain way. I think the one thing that Fickell thought would work, and I think he's very confident will work, is he took the team down to Platteville for the first week of training camp, and they slept in dorm rooms. They spent a lot of time together. There's really no distractions down there, no going back to their own apartments, no girlfriends to deal with at night, no friends, none of that. It's just kind of football and bonding 24/7. And I think that was his plan, was to kind of do that and see how it played out. And from everybody, the way everybody talks, I think it was a very successful mission down there. They came back feeling better about themselves and maybe a little bit closer than they would have been had they stayed in Madison for training camp.
It's kind of like a Camp Fickell touch there. Perhaps it might be a tradition.
Well, I think it will be. So he, just to give you some background, at Cincinnati, they did this for even before he got to Cincinnati, his previous stop, and they actually did a longer camp. They would drive to a place right on the Indiana-Ohio border and stay there two and a half weeks. And I think in a perfect world, Fickell would have liked to have gone to Platteville maybe 10 to 12 days. It just doesn't work out because Platteville, their own football team, was opening camp that second week of August. And so Wisconsin only had a limited amount of time. They had to get out of there. But I think 7 days was better than nothing for him. And I think it was definitely something that he liked and something he's going to continue to do in the future.
How does Coach Fickell do in developing players out of high school and preparing them for that next step to play in the NFL, if that is the trajectory. What is his track record there?
Yeah, very good. Cincinnati is not, you know, obviously it's not a power conference team. He got them to the playoffs in 2021. That team was just, I think there was nine NFL players, nine guys that ended up going in the NFL draft, including a couple first rounders. And then you look at the kind of the recruiting rankings on those guys, and none of them are really highly recruited guys. I mean, they're not the 4- and 5-star athletes that the big time programs get. So I think that speaks to his development. Maybe go find diamonds in the rough out on the recruiting trail, guys that you know love football and will work hard, and then develop them. And it's got to be a process between the coach. The coach has to develop, and the player has to want to develop. And I think he's pretty good at finding the right guys. And I think that will be the plan here going forward. For as much as we've talked about transfers, Kate, I don't think that's the long-range plan for Fickell. I don't think he wants to go get 10 to 12 transfers every year out of the portal. I think he wants to get full recruiting classes and develop those guys. So by the time they're in their third, fourth, fifth year, you know, they've kind of reached their peak and have developed over the course of time. And they can be really solid players, and you can kind of just keep that cycle going where you're always staying old and you're sustaining success because you're not always going and getting new players every year.
Mm-hmm. They really bring them up polished and ready and have more of a cohesive unit, not feeling behind every season trying to fill holes. Jim Polzin with a sports reporter, Wisconsin State Journal. We talk about the Badgers' upcoming football season that opens Saturday against the Buffalo Bulls. You can join in with your questions, your predictions, your concerns. 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Jim, you talked with UW-Madison's long snapper Peter Bowden, and here's the senior talking about his footwork on the field.
I just try and make sure my setup is as good as I can get it, and I trust myself throwing the ball, but I think the toughest thing is the cadence. We're all over the place. We want to be different. We mix it up. We don't keep anything set because there's no cues.
We don't keep anything set because there are no cues. What do you make of that? I mean, does this snap model work for the Badgers?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we're talking about differences, and special teams, I think, is going to look a little bit different. They like to do what's called the rugby style punt, where the punter kind of, he catches the ball and he moves to his left or right and tries to angle his punt just to kind of make it to A, give his teammates more time to get downfield, and to make it more difficult for the guy catching the punt to receive it. And that for this long snapper, that means hitting a moving target. You know, the punter will be moving as the ball is snapped. And so you're snapping the ball, not to a person, but to a place, to a spot. Mm. So it's been a little bit different for Bowden. And, you know, I think he's one of the more highly respected long snappers in the country. And I think he's adjusted well to it. But again, like it's kind of funny when you watch over the years, coaches like to do things different ways, and there's no cookie cutter approach to it. And Fickell's a little bit different than what Paul Chryst liked. And Paul Chryst is a little bit different than what Gary Anderson liked. And Gary Anderson was different than Brett Bielema, and so on and so on. So it's about adjusting. And I think it's really up to the players to adjust, but it's also up to the coaches to make sure what they're teaching is getting through to the players.
Turning to the look and feel of Camp Randall Stadium, completing $70 million in renovations last year, how would you describe the fan experience since the changes?
Yeah, always tough for me to do this one because I'm up in the press box and I'm not really living the life as a fan. Although I will say this, they've made upgrades to the press box this year too, including air conditioning, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Yes.
Yeah, I know it gets hot up there sometimes. But I will say this, I talked to a lot of people last year, and I do think that south end zone area, and I've been inside the Champions Club there. It looks sharp, and it's a nice feel. It's a nice gathering spot. The inside area is a nice gathering spot. You can have events. They've hosted weddings there. And I think you have to do that this day and age, is you have to evolve. And this is a very, very old stadium, and yet I think they've done a really good job, first under Barry Alvarez and Pat Richter, of making it look modern and adding suites and adding, signage and stuff just to kind of make it look like, you know, a modern stadium and with a modern feel. And sure, if you walk through that thing you see the old in it, right? I mean, you see the bathrooms and stuff, and there's still some work to be done, but I think
that's
from the
part
outside,
of the history.
Well, I know, and I like that. Yeah, and I don't want to change that. I agree with you. That's, you know, this was a training ground at one point, and I don't want that to go away. So I think if you can kind of blend, you know, speaking of this football team too, blending old and new is kind of the perfect way to do it. And that's certainly true with the stadium as well.
Well, Jim, we come full circle there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, Kate, my pleasure. It was fun. Thanks for having me.
Jim Polzin is a sports reporter for the Wisconsin State Journal, also hosts the Open Gym podcast. Catch it on Badger Extra. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A new poll finds that age would be a problem if President Joe Biden wins re-election next year. That same poll from Associated Press, NORC Center for Public Affairs Research, it asks respondents about the first words that come to mind for each candidate. For former President Donald Trump, it's words like corrupt and crooked. As we discuss politics on Capitol Hill, call in with a question. Share what's on your mind at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Manu Raju is CNN's chief congressional correspondent. Manu got a start in media working on the student newspaper at his alma mater, UW-Madison. Manu, welcome back to Wisconsin and welcome to the Ideas Network.
It's so great to be here, Kate. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with the fake elector scheme and comments from U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. Said the 10 Republicans who signed fake elector paperwork in Wisconsin shouldn't be prosecuted. And Johnson said they were engaging in constitutionally protected political activity. How unusual are the cases around the nation involving alternate slates of electors in an effort to overturn the 2020 presidential election?
Well, it's totally unprecedented. What we've seen here, both what's happened in Georgia, what's happened in the federal case, and trying to essentially alleging that the former president, his associates were involved in this racketeering scheme, conspiracy to overturn the presidential election in 2020. The fake electors are all part of that broader effort, the prosecutors allege, to essentially defraud the nation on January 6th, on the day of the counting of the votes, and have these electors essentially vote for Donald Trump in some of these key states, not Joe Biden, even though Joe Biden was the victor, state certified, elected, won these states. That is totally unprecedented, something we've not seen in history before. Johnson himself is in a bit of an unusual position. You'll recall that the January 6th Select Committee came up with some evidence showing that there was some discussions with Senator Johnson's office to try to pass off some of these fake electors to Vice President Mike Pence on the day of the counting of the votes. Johnson has repeatedly said, downplayed his involvement, said that there was nothing to it, there was just a phone call. He has pushed back on all of that, but his involvement on this has got some attention from the January 6th Select Committee, has not been part of the criminal case, but still the criminal case unprecedented, and we'll see if it does in fact go to trial before the November 2024 elections.
As you look at the states that had these fake certificates, do you think in Wisconsin that the group of Wisconsin Republicans who signed the paperwork will face any criminal charges? What might our attorney general do?
Yeah, those are all still open questions. These investigations are still ongoing, as we know, as we've seen in at least in the federal case, that the grand jury has interviewed additional witnesses in the aftermath of the indictment being unsealed against the former president. So it's hard to exactly say what additional charges may come to pass, because these proceedings happen behind closed doors, and sometimes there are superseding indictments that include additional information, additional evidence, additional charges. We saw that separately in the Mar-a-Lago documents case, where there was additional charges that the prosecutor filed in that case involving the former president and his associates. So we'll see what happens in the federal election case, which of course is just one of the four criminal cases facing the former president.
And it's hard to not turn away from the fact that this is all bumping up against the 2024 election cycle as it starts to heat up, as we see the first debate in Milwaukee for the Republicans. What do you make of that timing as these charges hit?
Yeah, the timing is interesting because we don't know the impact that this will have on the former president in the long term. So far, they've had very little on the primary electorate. We've seen that, in fact, that Donald Trump's support has increased in the primary as he's faced these charges, even though he is still a very weak general election candidate, and these charges don't help him in a general election. That's for certain. The challenge for in folks who are trying to go after Trump is that a lot of these views are just Donald Trump are just baked into the electorate. People who don't like Donald Trump don't like Donald Trump. They hate Donald Trump. People who love Donald Trump, they love Donald Trump. He's an incredibly polarizing figure, perhaps the most polarizing figure of our lifetime. So even with new information, new damaging information, potentially an unprecedented conviction of a former president, it's unclear how much that will actually move the electorate. But I think regardless of all this, Trump is still a weak general election candidate, given how much he turns off voters, particularly in the suburban areas, among educated voters in the suburbs, typically voters, a lot of them who have been Republican-leaning voters, more moderate voters. Those voters have been put off of Trump, not just even before all these criminal charges. So it's hard to see how he wins those critical blocks of voters back for a general election. But that may not make a difference in the primary, which underscores the Republicans' larger problem, is that Trump seems likely at the moment to get the nomination, despite all of this, even as he could be a very weak candidate against Biden, who himself has his own problems in a general election.
Let's turn our attention now to House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. You and your CNN colleagues are reporting that McCarthy and other Republican leaders are discussing an impeachment inquiry into President Joe Biden. What would House Republicans have to gain or lose by impeaching Biden?
Well, it's a huge risk because only Biden would be just the fourth president in American history to be impeached. Donald Trump was the only president to be impeached twice. And of course, there was Clinton before him, and there's Andrew Johnson way, way, way before Clinton. So this is an incredibly rare thing. And the political backlash, you saw what happened to Clinton after his impeachment. He got more popular, and that is going to be something that they weigh. So that's the politics of it. Then you have to look at the substance and the votes. So first on the votes, in order to actually launch an impeachment inquiry, there are two ways you can actually investigate and to determine whether a president should be charged with high crimes or misdemeanors. You can actually have the investigation, or you can have a vote to launch the investigation. That debate is still ongoing within Kevin McCarthy's office at this moment, whether to actually have a vote to launch an impeachment inquiry. If they do, that could put a lot of their members in a difficult spot. But if they don't, then they'll be criticized for not moving forward through the normal process as they promised to do on an investigation as significant as this. So he could only lose four Republican votes on any party line vote, and there are 18 Republicans who come from districts that Joe Biden won, and many of them are squeamish about going down that route. So it's uncertain he has the votes to even launch an impeachment inquiry, let alone charge the president with committing high crimes or misdemeanors, a very, very serious charge. So then there's the substance of it. So what the Republicans have I found out so far is that Hunter Biden, the president's son, tried to use his relationships with his dad to improve his foreign business dealings and the like. They've gotten some information on that regard. What they have not established is that whether Joe Biden took any official action to benefit his son, or whether he benefited financially from his son's decisions and the like. There's a lot of questions, but they have now established perhaps their most serious allegation here. So the question is, can they establish it? If they don't establish that, will they still impeach him? And if they still move forward to try to impeach him without proving some of the central allegations here, will that be enough to convince some of their squeamish moderates who are in difficult races to vote to impeach the president? So those are all complicated things. And the Democrats say this is all in trumped up charges that have no basis in reality, conspiracy chasing to try to hurt Joe Biden or try to help turn the focus away from Donald Trump's legal problems. So that is their argument, which we'll hear almost certainly intensify as this heats up when they get back into session next month.
Manu Raju with us, chief congressional correspondent at CNN, as we take a look at national politics and hear from you with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Manu, the Republican House Freedom Caucus threatens a government shutdown at the end of September as a means to further its agenda. What would this kind of shutdown mean for government-funded services?
It would be a huge problem. Only essential services would be allowed to continue. Things such as everything from national parks to people who work for federal government agencies. Parks could be closed, people may not get their paychecks on time, and every government service you can imagine would be shut down. We've seen this happen before. It happened during the Trump administration. It happened under Barack Obama. It happened under Bill Clinton. And the question is, does it happen now? So there are some key deadlines that are coming up. September 30th is the deadline that they have to reach to pass in government funding legislation to avoid a shutdown. They almost certainly will not be able to approve new funding legislation that sets the funding levels across the federal government, everything from State Department to the Pentagon to ag programs to energy programs. They won't be able to reach a deal on the new funding levels by September 30th. But they'll try to pass a continuing resolution, essentially extending current government funding. There's still a question about whether they can even pass a short-term continuing resolution to keep the government operating probably until early December. One big reason why is there's a dispute about whether or not to include more money for Ukraine. Mm-hmm. Republicans are divided over that subject. The White House is pushing it hard. Senate Republican leaders are pushing it hard. House Republicans are much more skittish about that. So that's a big question mark, how they deal with that issue. But even if they do pass a short-term extension, the bigger problem on how to fund the rest of the government for the rest of the year is still unresolved.
Still lingering out there. Yes.
Still lingering. And this is the reason why you mentioned the Freedom Caucus, is because a deal that was cut between the Speaker and the White House to raise the national debt limit, remember that, to avoid the first ever default, they reached a deal to actually set government funding levels for the new coming year, this issue. But McCarthy since then has backed away from that deal under pressure from his far right, who wants to cut spending even further. And that has divided Republicans. Senate Republicans are opposed to that effort by McCarthy. Senate Democrats are, the White House is. The House Republicans say that more funding needs to be cut. And that is the crux of the dispute right now, and a real reason why there are serious concerns about a shutdown in the fall.
Manu Raju, chief congressional correspondent at CNN, briefing us on politics as we head into the fall. And the latest from Capitol Hill, you can be part of the conversation at any point. Call in with a question or a comment at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As the 2024 election cycle starts to heat up with former President Donald Trump at the top of a crowded GOP field and Democrats prepared to back President Joe Biden, We look to Capitol Hill for developments, and you can be part of the discussion calling in with a question, sharing a concern at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We have Manu Raju with us, chief congressional correspondent at CNN. Manu, looking at this new poll by the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Research, the respondents using words including corrupt and dishonest to describe former President Trump and old and confused to describe President Biden. How do lawmakers respond to such unflattering portraits of the leaders of their parties?
Yeah, look, I mean, not many members are very excited about their choices for president on Capitol Hill. Yes, you have diehards in both parties who do support their top of their ticket. Their leadership is publicly supporting the top of their ticket, especially on the Democratic side. But if you push them a little further, they know, if we talk about the Democrats first, they know that Joe Biden is very vulnerable. And it's one of the things that they are very concerned about, even with the prospects of facing Donald Trump, who is himself historically unpopular and has all these problems. They know that Biden is not has become a weaker candidate. Questions about his age. There's questions about what will happen on the campaign trail, you know, whether he can pull it off. So there is just a lot of uncertainty among the Democrats. And then the Republicans are just divided over Donald Trump. You have folks who are very close to him on the far right of the House Republican Conference, and among some Republicans as well. Senate Republican leaders want nothing to do with Donald Trump. Mitch McConnell, for instance, has made clear he wants to move on from the Trump era. He does not want to talk about Trump. He knows he blames Trump for costing them the Senate majority in the last midterm election. So that is a real concern. But then you put someone like Kevin McCarthy, the House Speaker, he needs Trump's support to help him stay in power as the Speaker of the House. And that is what drives his calculation, how he deals with the former president. So he's trying to stay close with the former president despite all of his problems.
Turning our attention for a moment to Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, abruptly stopped speaking, froze in front of news cameras yesterday, a similar incident in July. And you had reported McConnell has fallen twice this year. To what extent should elected officials be questioned about their physical fitness to hold public office?
Yeah, they absolutely should, especially since they are holding these key positions. They represent millions of constituents, and people need to know what we are seeing and whether they can hold on to the job. Mitch McConnell, his health scares have prompted a lot of questions about whether he can continue to lead the Senate. His office and his allies say that he is fine. They have not provided any real explanation about what exactly happened and why he froze yesterday and also in July. They say that he was, quote, lightheaded, but don't give any reason other than why he was lightheaded or provide any sort of underlying reason for that. The question for McConnell is going to be, how long does he stay as Republican leader beyond this current Congress? He's made clear he plans to stay until the end of next year. But what will he do after that? That is really the big question on Capitol Hill. He is the longest serving party leader in history. He has had such a profound impact on our politics, everything from the Supreme Court to how Republicans have handled the Trump and Obama and some of the key policy issues. He's still a staunch advocate for aid for Ukraine, something he's pushing for right now. So if he were to step aside, it would have major ramifications for the Republican Party, how they handle the current president or a new president after the 2024 elections. And that is just going to be the big question, particularly after this recent health scare and him having a concussion in March and his repeated episodes of falling that have all caused questions about how long he can stay in the job.
You've also reported that U.S. Senator Joe Manchin may change his party affiliation from Democrat to independent and run as a third party candidate for president. If the West Virginia senator does this, how would it affect national politics?
Yeah, Manchin is a curious case. It is really unclear what he decides to do. He likes the attention. He wants to focus on, in his view, avoid the extremes in the two parties, bringing the two parties together. That is a larger political argument. The question for me, there's twofold. One, Is he actually going to run for a third party candidate president? To me, it feels unlikely that he will do that, given there does not seem to be much of a path for a third party candidate. And then the other question, perhaps a bigger question in Congress, is whether he runs for re-election in the Senate. That is a huge question because he's probably the only Democrat who can win as a Democrat in West Virginia, a state that is very, very conservative. He has not said what he will do. If he does not run, it will almost certainly flip to the GOP. And this is a hugely contested, this is a very tightly contested fight for the overall control of the Senate. So that would greatly enhance Republicans' ability to take back control of the chamber if he decides to step aside. So even if he runs as an independent Democrat or caucuses with a Democrat, those are all questions that are still percolating out there. But Manchin's political future is a big question among a lot of his colleagues these days.
We're getting analysis on national politics with Manu Raju with us, chief congressional correspondent for CNN. You can join in with your questions about Capitol Hill, 800-642-1234. Manu, turning your attention to you, starting this fall, you'll be the new anchor of the Sunday edition of Inside Politics. How will you balance that anchor job, the anchor desk, with your continuing coverage of Capitol Hill?
That's a good question. One that my family asks me every day. I thank you for the plug. I am, yes, on Sundays, this will be at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Central, starting in the fall. September 24th is our first day of our new show. I will still be on Capitol Hill every day reporting on the news that's happening. And my goal and hope is to bring new information, new reporting, new interviews to the show and help drive our discussion about where things are in politics, where things are on the campaign trail, the White House, and on Capitol Hill, really on some of the key issues, the people, the players, the power on Capitol Hill, and really try to give new insight into what's happening, stuff that people who really want to follow this stuff and care about it can really understand in an hour show. So I hope you all will tune in.
Thank you. Yes. We only have a few moments left, but you have said you spend a lot of time staking out the offices of congressional members. You get comments from them on the news of the day. How often do lawmakers brush you off or perhaps insult you rather than answer your questions?
Quite a bit. You have to have a thick skin in this job. There are senators only elevators in which they can hop in, hit door closed, and not let you get in the elevator. That happens quite often. You know, our job is, we are very fortunate to be in a position where we can question these members. The beauty of covering Capitol Hill is that you can ask any member, the Speaker of the House or the most low backbenching member, a question in the hallways. They don't have to answer your questions, but you can ask them a question. And that you can't do that at the White House, but you can do that on the Hill, which gives us a lot of responsibility to pose important questions to these key leaders. So, you know, more often than not, I can get answers, but you have to be ready. You have to be the right place at the right time. You have to be waiting for long hours outside offices. But when you have that opportunity, you have to take advantage of it, because otherwise a lot of these members don't want to go on the record about their views about any of the key issues or what they're doing behind the scenes. But it's our responsibility to press them on that.
Manu, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. And on Wisconsin.
On Wisconsin, Manu Raju, CNN's chief congressional correspondent, alumnus of UW-Madison. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.